unlike some of the earlier cases, this one is allotted 20 minutes aside by the clerk, but those are allocations the clerk makes by weighing the briefs. And, it doesn't really always evaluate correctly the amount of time there should be. I know there are a lot of issues raised, but some of them are fairly central and some we can easily deal with just from reading the briefs.
This is your lucky day. That's, I have a prepared statement that takes 5 minutes.
Oh, very good.
Very good.
We'll give you five.
But I would request a favor. First of all, I'm Larry Barker. I represent the appellant plaintiff, Mr. Brokaw. And I would request one favor that you have on top there to refer to the ER, the excerpts of record. Not the SER, but just the ER. It's just the one volume.
Okay, we won't look at the SER.
Okay.
All right. Are you referring to all the orders, or what do you want us to look at?
Just, if you would just have it there, I'm probably going to turn you to about 4 or 5 pages to help you get a handle on the case, and then you'd be on your way to knowing exactly what's going on.
All right, great.
Great overview.
Yes, here we are.
Okay. In 1995, Mr. Brokaw was working as a senior design engineer at TRW. When he was solicited by Mr. Weigel, the manager of mechanical engineering at Qualcomm. Mr. Weigel promised substantial stock to leave the pension job at TRW, and the manager said that should not be a problem. We're all getting it. He attended the employee Christmas party, that is Mr. Brokaw, the plaintiff. He attended the employee Christmas party in December 1995. Now, the court did make a finding at ER 186, please make a note of this, that Mr. Brokaw was solicited with stock options as part of his solicitation offer to work at Qualcomm. That's ER 186. Mr. Brokaw relied on the promise and began work at Qualcomm as a senior design engineer on January 29, 2000. That should be the year 1996. Before that date, he had never been told that he would lose his stock if he were laid off. Qualcomm defends by Attorney Connaughton's here declaration that Qualcomm prepared a document on February 2, 1996, claiming that all options would be lost upon termination. Now, February 2, 1996 is after Mr. Brokaw started work. Qualcomm unilaterally prepared a schedule that stated that Mr. Brokaw would not get any stock for over 2 years after starting work, and would not get 40% of his stock until over 5 years and 2 months later. California Code of Regulations, Section 260.140.41F, states that options must vest at not more than 20% per year, and therefore Qualcomm's entire restrictive schedule was illegal. Qualcomm has made a smokescreen by citing stock qualification requirements when issuer requirements should be cited. That is, there are at least two areas of the corporation's code. Those refer to qualifying stock, which has certain requirements, but there are also another area of issuer transactions when you are issuing something. And so Qualcomm is only giving you the law dealing with qualifying stock and not with issuing stock, which was what we're talking about. It's very specific in that citation. What Qualcomm should be citing, or what the court should be looking at, is California Corporations Code, Section 25-102-0. That's 25,102 parentheses O. And that requires compliance with CCR 260.140.41. Qualcomm's vesting schedule of 40% of the stock more than 5 years and 2 months after starting work is unconscionable. The regulation, that's the CCR, sets a maximum standard and public policy of conscionability. Mr. Brokaw did a great job for 4.5 years and was laid off July 7th, 2000. His unvested options were worth about $400,000. Those options had to be set aside. That is, the corporation had to identify them and set them aside pursuant to state and federal laws and also pursuant to company policy. Qualcomm was unjustly enriched by keeping the set-aside stock. Unjust enrichment does not require any wrongdoing, such as fraud. Restitution is required when he or she has been unjustly enriched at the expense of another. The term benefit connotes any type of advantage, and that's citing the California Supreme Court case of Gerardo v. Antonioli. Qualcomm profited by Mr. Brokaw's work and then kept the appreciation of the promised benefit by the trick of whimsical layoff to deprive the subservient employee of the benefit. An employer should be prohibited from granting a benefit contingent on continued employment and then terminating the employee to deprive the employee of the promised benefit. California's new jury instructions are the law regarding good faith. If you think of the jury instructions, what you can have is a situation where let's say the California Supreme Court had case law, but then there was a new jury instruction. Well, the jury instructions are what's read to the jury as applying the law to the facts, and so it seems that the jury instructions would be what the law is and not a previous case law. Jury instructions are the law because they're read to the jury and used by the court regardless of any other statutes of cases. Now, regarding California Jury Instruction 2423, that's the instruction for breach of implied contract of good faith and fair dealing, and it specifically states that both parties to an employment relationship have a duty not to do anything that prevents the other from receiving the benefits of their agreement. Good faith means honesty of purpose without any intention to mislead or take advantage of another. Mr. Brokaw was asked to train Paul Ripp, a younger worker, to replace him. This is dealing with age discrimination. Mr. Brokaw trained Mr. Rep, who was performing his job when Mr. Brokaw left. Mr. Brokaw has a prima facie case for age discrimination, which does not involve burden switching, even if Qualcomm gave a reason to lay off Mr. Brokaw. In his unit, that's Mr. Brokaw's unit, there were 440 engineers, of which 46 were laid off. The entire unit had only 17 engineers over the age of 57, and Qualcomm laid off 13 of them. Qualcomm retained 390 of the engineers under 57 years old. Therefore, an engineer in the Global Star unit had a 10 times greater chance of being laid off if over the age of 57. A math expert declared that laying off 13 of the 17 workers over 57 years old was statistically unfair by Qualcomm by 3.1 billion to 1. Qualcomm said the reason Mr. Brokaw was laid off, that he was unqualified and unneeded. However, an email from Mr. Ellis stated that Mr. Brokaw was the only one who could do the job. Mr. Ellis said they were laying off the older workers and higher salaried workers to save money. Qualcomm defends this suit with Mr. Brokaw's deposition. They use Mr. Brokaw's deposition and with Qualcomm's unilateral unconscionable documents that restrict Mr. Brokaw's stock rights. Mr. Brokaw's depositions resulted in conflicting statements, but he was thwarted from corrections in his second deposition by the magistrate. Mr. Brokaw has Parkinson's disease and was under disabling medication during both depositions. If you want to make a note as to where that is in the record, he told, at the beginning of the deposition, he told them both times he had Parkinson's disease, he was under medication, and it would affect him, and that's at ER 106, you don't have to look now, and also SER 459 for the second deposition. Now, the way the law works, Mr. Brokaw's case is not to be dismissed just because he is disabled pursuant to Federal Rules of Evidence 803, parentheses 2, and 804, parentheses A, parentheses 3. The case is supposed to be handled by using his self-serving statements pursuant to Federal Rules of Evidence 803, parentheses 3, not the improper leading questions of his deposition while he was under medication. Now, the lower court did not even acknowledge any of Mr. Brokaw's corrections, and Mr. Connaughton did not even give the court Mr. Brokaw's corrections. He had errata sheets with both of his depositions, and those were not even given to the court except later on for another motion on the second, only on the second deposition. This case should be viewed by using Mr. Brokaw's complaints and declarations as truthful. A complaint can be amended even during trial, and leave shall be freely given when justice so requires, pursuant to Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 15, parentheses A, Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 15, parentheses B, allows for amendment of a complaint to conform to the evidence. Mr. Brokaw's numerous signed declarations conform to the facts in the complaints and support all of the causes of action. Regarding Qualcomm's restrictive documents, please turn to ER-146A. So if you could do that now, I would really appreciate it. That's the non-qualified stock option agreement. And it begins with, has this day granted to you? So what we're talking about here is whether this document is unconscionable. Now, the lower court didn't refer to all the lower court said that Mr. Brokaw was an at-will employee and therefore didn't have any rights. That's all it said. It didn't refer to it didn't quote any of this document here, which is the only one that says Mr. Brokaw, according to the defense, the appellee, that Mr. Brokaw would lose his rights. The front page, if you're looking at 146A, like I say at the very front of it, it says, has this day granted to you? It's called a non-qualified stock option agreement. But the truth of the matter is the intent of it was not to do that at all. It wasn't to give Mr. Brokaw any stock necessarily. It was actually, and it had a schedule there on it where he gets 40% over 5 years. It's 5 years and 2 months and 2 days later, actually, from starting work. But if you look, let's see. If you look at 146B, that's the next page, after more confusing language, paragraph 5, and by the way, this is the only time any court or I would address these issues, would talk about them. You're the only people that, the only court that's ever not listened to this because the court has never cited it or never talked about it. Mr. Connaughton's, none of his documents cite any of these, really. They never talk about any of these. Okay, so 146B, after more confusing language, paragraph 5 supposedly terminates options.
You made a representation you were going to argue for 5 minutes.
Yes.
You now argued 11.
I'm sorry?
Well, that's the fact.
Okay, I have about 20 more sentences. I'll be done. I'm sorry. I apologize for that.
Remaining 8 minutes.
Well, thank you. Okay, the whole document is unconscionable. There's about 4 pages here. And on the first page, it referred to federal regulations, Regulation T, and so forth. And it's only when you get to this paragraph 5, you can see how confusing it is. It's where it talks about terminating within 30 days that one would lose their unvested stock options. By looking at that, well, Mr. Brokaw is not a college graduate. The whole document is unconscionable since it's confusing to a reasonable person, was unilaterally prepared by a party of superior bargaining power, and does not grant any additional benefits. It looks to be a pre-printed form, which, and those are just some of the rules of something being unconscionable. It doesn't give him any additional benefits over what was already promised. What I said earlier, and I do apologize, that reading this only takes 5 minutes, but if you quickly would look at these, they can be looked at very quickly, and that is in addition to what I'm reading. I just said it would take that time to read it. ER-147 is an acknowledgement form. Mr. Brokaw didn't. If you look at page 146, ER-146D, Mr. Brokaw didn't sign anything. This thing is dated February the 2nd, 1996, unilaterally prepared by Qualcomm, and Mr. Brokaw didn't sign it. It was just given to Brokaw. And they refer to 147, which it begins with its acknowledgement of receipt, is what it is. So that's add further confusion. And it does have a place where Mr. Brokaw doesn't remember this, but it has a place there for his signature. So it begins with it. And it's only down at the very end of the acknowledgement form that it says that he acknowledges that it is somehow supersedes all prior oral and written agreements. Well, Mr. Brokaw never remembers seeing this and never agreed that he would lose his promised stock. And this was all done. See, this was March the 15th, 1996, of getting this receipt. And that would be, like 25 days after he was an employee. Those of you that will turn to ER-208, it's an email from Mr. Ellis. Now, Qualcomm ER-208 is an email from Mr. Ellis. And what Qualcomm is basically saying is that Mr. Brokaw was unneeded and unwanted. But if you look at ER-208, that is Mr. Ellis arguing that Mr. Brokaw is the only one who can do the job. That's, of course, referring to the age discrimination situation. Mr. Brokaw's supervisor is Mr. Ellis, and he stated Mr. Brokaw was the only one who could do the job there. So Qualcomm's claims that Mr. Brokaw was unqualified and unneeded are not true. So how did the lower court handle Mr. Brokaw's prima facie case of age discrimination? At ER 190, the court stated that Mr. Brokaw was responding to Qualcomm's reply brief, which would be impossible. As you know, that's clearly a mistake, because, you know, the reply brief, you know, the defense counsel makes a reply brief, and then the one before that is Mr. Brokaw's, but he had not read the reply brief by then. The court used burden switching in a disparate treatment cause of action, which is forbidden by Inlow versus Salem and Kaiser. The parties have submitted more than 1,000 pages of excerpts of record, and that alone indicates that there are substantial factual disputes, especially involving the intent of the parties, that should be settled by the trier of fact. Therefore, all the causes of action should be restored. And I'd like to save the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Not that much.
14 minutes and less than 15 minutes, I think, is not bad. We're talking, you're talking 50 issues here or more.
Yeah, we know.
So,
okay.
Thank you, counsel.
You're welcome. Is there any questions or comments? Thank you.
May it please the court. I'm Joe Cannon. I represent Appellee Qualcomm. I will be extraordinarily brief.
I hope so.
If one accepts Mr. Brokaw's underlying premise, which is obvious but unstated in his briefs, then what we have is, I guess, two judges and a magistrate judge all making, I thought 26, but I guess 50, separate rulings that all had one thing in common, that they were all wrong. I would submit that that would be a remarkable case in front of this court, and I would also respectfully submit that this case is in many ways not remarkable. The issues were raised below. They were briefed below. The record before Your Honor is thick and wide and deep. And I believe even a cursory review of the main orders, the first motion to dismiss order, which is at page 44 of the excerpts, the second motion to dismiss order, which is at page 86, the summary judgment order, the first one at excerpts 180, show a court being very thoughtful, listening to all of Mr. Brokaw's arguments, and giving, at a minimum, a long, thoughtful discussion of the law that's now before you for review. And I'd respectfully submit that, based upon the authorities that are before you presently, that an affirmation would be appropriate. Thank you. If you have any questions, Your Honors, I'll be happy to answer.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
There's nothing to rebut in what counsel said.
I have just a minute.
If you, 1 minute.
Okay.
There was a comment there that there were lots of rulings, and therefore they all agreed. That's not true. The first judge upheld the complaint, at least, as far as fraud and negligent misrepresentation, unlawful, unfair business practice, and several other ones. And it was only until the second judge came around that he had the case for 20 days and dismissed all of these other cases and causes of action with basically just taking defendant's facts and saying that's what the case was and not really reciting any of plaintiff's declarations is the truth. So that what he just said isn't true because the first judge had those still going and they were fine. Now, fraud involves specific allegations that must be put in the complaint, and the first judge said that was fine and cited the Lazar case, which was fine. And so we've already specifically pleaded all these, and now we're blindsided later on by the judge who says, well, those specific allegations aren't proper.
That's the end of the minute. Thank you very much. Thank you, both counsel.
Thank you.
The case just argued will be submitted. The next case is City of San Diego versus United States District Court.